முகம் கரோதி வாசாலம் பங்கும் லங்கயதே கிரீம் யத் கிருபா தமஹம் வந்தே ஸ்ரீகுரும் தினதாரிணம் பரமானந்த மாதவம் ஸ்ரீ சைதன்யமீஸ்வரம் நம ஓம் விஷ்ணுபதாய கிருஷ்ணபிருஷ்டாய பூதலே ஸ்ரீமதே ஜயபதாக ஸ்வாமினிதி நாமினே நம ஓம் விஷ்ணுபாதாய கிருஷ்ணபிருஷ்டாய பூதலே ஸ்ரீமதே பக்தி வேதாந்த ஸ்வாமினிதி நாமினே நமஸ்தே சாரஸ்வதே தேவே கௌரவாணி பிரச்சாரிணே நிர்விசேஷ சூன்யவாதி பாஷ்சத்ய தேசதாரிணே ஜய ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபோ நித்யானந்த ஸ்ரீ அத்வைத கதாதர ஸ்ரீவாசாதி கௌர பக்த விருந்த ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா கிருஷ்ண கிருஷ்ணா ஹரே 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 ராம ஹரே ராம ராம ராம் ஹரே ஹரே. ஸ்ரீல பிரபுபாதி கி ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா. சாரி ஃபார் பீங் a little late. I actually snoozed off. A little tired. I said that I could speak on anything I want. I would prefer to read a little Shastra from Prabhupada's words first. So I'll just open something and read a few words, and then I'll try to speak on some subject matter that's interesting. Just reading from Canto 10, Chapter 28, Text 3. Because, verse, Text 2, I'm sorry, Text 2. Tam grihitvana yad brityo varunasayusura antikam avajnaya surim velam pravishtam udakam nishi. Because Nanda Maharaj entered the water in the dark of the night, disregarding that the time was inauspicious, a demoniac servant of Varuna seized him and brought him to his master. Purport. Nanda Maharaj was intent on breaking his fast during the Dwadashi day, of which there remained only a few minutes. Thus he entered the water to bathe at an inauspicious time, before the first dawn light. The servant of Varuna who arrested Nanda Maharaj is stated here to be an asura or demon for obvious reasons. First, the servant was foolishly ignorant of Nanda Maharaj's position as a pastime father of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Also, Nanda Maharaj's intention was to carry out the injunctions of scripture. Therefore, Varuna's servant should not have arrested Nanda on the technical grounds that he bathed in the Yamuna at an inauspicious time. Later in this chapter, Varuna himself will say, Ajanata mamakena mudhena. This was done by my ignorant servant who is a fool. This foolish servant did not understand the position of Krishna or Nanda Maharaj or devotional service to the Lord. In conclusion, it is clear that Lord Krishna wanted to give his personal audience to Varuna and simultaneously accomplish other didactic purposes. Thus his wonderful pastime will now unfold. O King, not seeing Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men loudly cried out, O Krishna, O Rama. Lord Krishna heard their cries and understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore, the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, went to the court of Varunadeva. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when Nanda Maharaj went to bathe in the river, he was accompanied by several cowherd men. When Nanda Maharaj did not come out of the water, they began to cry out, and Lord Krishna immediately came there. Understanding the situation, Sri Krishna entered the water and went to the court of the demigod Varuna, determined to free his father and the other cowherd men from fear of a mere demigod. Seeing that the Lord Hrishikesha had arrived, for demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation about seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. Shri Varuna said, "Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved. O Lord, those who accept your lotus feet, O personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence." Purport. Varuna ecstatically exclaims here that since he has now seen the infinitely gorgeous body of Lord Krishna, the trouble of assuming a material body has now been supremely justified. Indeed, the artha, the goal or real value of Varuna's life, has now been achieved because Lord Krishna's form is transcendental. Those who accept his lotus feet go beyond the boundary of material existence, and thus only the spiritually unaware would presume that the Lord's lotus feet are material. Namastubhyam bhagavate brahmane paramatmane nayatra shruyate maya loka srishti vikalpana. My obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world. Purport. The word Shruyate is significant here. Shruti or Vedic literature consists of authorized statements made by the Lord Himself or His enlightened representatives. Thus neither the Lord nor recognized spiritual authorities would ever say that within the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, there is the fault of illusion. Srila Sridhara Swami points out that the word Brahmane here indicates the Lord is full in Himself, and that the term Paramatmane indicates He is the controller of all living entities. Thus within the Supreme Being, complete in Himself and omnipotent, we do not find any jurisdiction of the material illusory energy. Om Tat Sat. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Hare Krishna. Very happy to be here in Alachua, the community of devotees. I heard that there are plenty of Prabhupada's disciples here. So, no more? Yeah, more than that. Yeah, so it is, I thought, a great important occasion for me to be amongst many senior persons, senior devotees. I wanted to see many of them and take their blessings, because they are quite often, many of them are leaving the planet soon. So I'm happy to be here and I seek all their blessings. I'm coming way down from South India. I sort of preach and take some little responsibility in Kerala, Tamil Nadu, and other portions of South India. I also travel to other places in the Gulf, in other parts of Asia, Southeast Asia, and sometimes make sorties to the West. I'm coming here after a long time. So, in this little instance that we read about Nanda Maharaj, how Krishna is taking a very special role in protecting his father, Nanda Maharaj, and also taking a very special role in terms of Nanda Maharaj being his dear devotee, is very nicely illustrated in this pastime. Protecting Krishna's devotees has been one of Krishna's most important activities. We can see that in Vrindavan, protecting the gopas, protecting his cows and calves and giving them the necessary sustenance. So Krishna, as is mentioned, we are supposed to seek his protection, and Krishna is more than happy to extend his protection. And even if we didn't ask for Krishna's protection, Krishna is protecting everybody, even if they are not his devotees. And we may not be recognizing that. To become conscious of Krishna and to become conscious of his protection is what is the process of Krishna consciousness. Tenavina trinamapina chalati. Prabhupada explained to us that without Krishna's knowledge, without Krishna's protection, there's nothing happening in this world. And devotees of the Lord, they are always seeking Krishna's protection. At every minute, at every time. Sometimes they are in dire need of Krishna's protection. And they visibly seek Krishna's protection. So, a person who is Krishna conscious is not afraid. At the same time, a person who knows Krishna will protect him, he is not overstepping and thinking and taking for granted Krishna's protection. Sometimes devotees of the Lord, they may become overly presumptuous about Krishna's protection. And then Krishna is also at that time teaching them a little bit of a lesson. So in this way we can see Krishna also performed many leelas wherein he delayed his protection. And sometimes he instantly gave his protection. Somehow or the other in the process he increased the consciousness of Krishna that the devotee has. In South India where I preach in Kerala, there's a wonderful temple called Guruvayur Appan. I think some of you would have heard about it. There Krishna is worshipped in the form of Narayana, four-handed form. It's the same Krishna who appeared appeared to Vasudeva and Devaki when in the prison house Vasudeva and Devaki got Krishna as a child, and the Lord appeared in a four-handed form first. And then he became two-handed Krishna, baby Krishna. So when he appeared in that four-handed form, he revealed himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vasudeva and Devaki offered prayers. It's mentioned that he appeared in that four-handed form because they were worshipping a four-handed form, deity of the Lord. And that deity of the Lord they had worshipped in all their three appearances as Krishna's parents. This is when he appeared as Krishna for Vasudeva and Devaki. And previously, Prishni and Sutapa, they had Prishni Garbha as a son. And before that, as Kashyapa and Aditi, Vamanadeva was their son. So in all these three lifetimes, they had worshipped the same deity, four-handed form of the Lord. And it's mentioned that's why the four-handed form of the Lord appeared in front of Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house. So it's mentioned that same deity which they worshipped was later discovered by Narada Muni after Dwaraka went under the waters. And then Narada Muni specifically discovered this deity and he wanted to install this deity So he gave this specific service to the demigods Guru and Vayu, that is Brihaspati and Vayu, Devata. And they both took this deity and came looking for a place to install the deity. That's how they came right down to this place in Kerala. And there they saw a very beautiful place with a huge lake and very nice flowers and trees around it. And Lord Shiva was meditating there. So they found the place to be very nice, very beautiful. So for a moment they halted there. When they did so, Lord Shiva, he appeared there. Because these were very powerful demigods. So he came and gave darshan to them. And they revealed that we are here because we are looking for a place to install this deity of Narayana, Krishna. And Lord Shiva, he welcomed Krishna. And he mentioned that definitely this is the best place. And he said, I will leave this place. Because Vishnu, because Narayana has appeared here, I will leave this place and I will offer this place to him. In this way, they installed, Guru and Vayu together installed this deity there. And that deity came to be known as Guru Vayur Appan. Appan means Lord. The Lord of Guru and Vayu. And the deity is being worshipped there since then. Passed through many different great kings. And now it's being handled by a board closely linked to the government. But a very beautiful deity and very gorgeous worship. I think that's the only temple in the world which has got about 55 elephants. I once saw BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation, coming and doing a whole show on these elephants owned by the Lord and the festival that they have. They have an amazing festival where there's an elephant race, the mahout on top of the elephant, and sometimes running next to the elephant. They have an elephant race from one particular point till the temple, and they all run thundering, you know, the whole ground is shaking. They run to the temple and the mahout is goading the elephant. Whoever is the mahout next to the elephant, and a whole lot of elephants run. And some elephant definitely is much faster and he takes the lead and reaches the temple first. And they run into the temple and go around the deity. It's amazing to watch this. As soon as the elephant that won the race is spotted, then he becomes the special elephant for the whole 10-day festival and he is allowed to carry the Lord. So the elephants, they want to do that service. So they run. And the mahouts who are behind that particular elephant, they, you know, goad the elephant to get the first place. So I saw the BBC shooting this elephant race. It's very amazing. And how the Lord came to have these elephants as his own property. It's also an interesting story, just a little diversion. Previously, the temple was very, very small and had hardly any property or anything. And there was a very old pujari. You know, in Kerala, the Brahmins are called Nambudris. They have a shikha that's not on the backside of the head. They have a shikha coming out like this from the front of the head and hanging on the forehead. You see pictures of them, you see ancient Kerala history. Shankaracharya was like that. He had a shikha before he took sannyas like that. He's from that area. He has a very close relationship with this temple. So he was an elderly Nambudri, Brahmana, worshipping the Lord for long. And one day the Lord appeared in his dream and he said that, I like to ride an elephant. Why don't you get me an elephant? Gajarohanam, taking an elephant ride is very famous in Kerala. The deity is carried on an elephant. So the Lord told him, I want to ride an elephant. So he got up in the early morning and said, did I see that right? Did I hear it right? And then he knew that, yes, the Lord has come in my dream and is asking for an elephant ride. Where will I go for an elephant? There's hardly any energy left in me to actually do the regular puja work that I'm assigned. And the Lord desires that he would ride an elephant. So he didn't think much about it. He said, it's not something that I could do. The next day, again in the dream, the Lord appeared and said, I told you I want to ride an elephant. So he became, sure about the fact that it is the Lord who wants to ride an elephant. This is not just a dream. And so he finished his puja work early that day and locked the temple, because not many people were coming those days. But there were famous Lord Shiva temples and famous Devi temples around, very opulent. And there was a Lord Shiva temple that had a lot of elephants. And there was a big festival going on. So he went up, doubled up with his walking stick. He went, walked all the way, which he never normally did. And he went there and met, during the festival, he met the pujari who was so busy and said, can I have an elephant to ride? My Lord wants to ride an elephant. So this old pujari was just shoved away and said, just get lost. We have a big festival and there are so many elephants been decorated. They all caparisoned very nicely. They have a big umbrella. They look very beautiful if you've seen pictures of it. So he said, get away. And this poor old man was pushed aside. And that huge crowd of people came forward. There was a big festival. And there were fireworks and the Lord was taken on top of the elephant. There was a parade and everything. So this elderly man came back because he couldn't take it. It was time, it was late, and he was sad. He came back and he said, what can I do? I am not able to do this service for you, my dear Lord. Who will listen to me? I am just a poor pujari from a small temple. And this is an opulent temple and there's so many people there. Who's going to listen to me? So he was actually very sad. I tried, I couldn't do it. So he came back and he lied down. And in the morning, he was woken up by the Lord and said, go and get the elephant. They are waiting outside. So he got up and he said, now what? He went outside. He opened the door and he saw that there were so many elephants waiting outside the door of the small temple. He was surprised. And they all, as soon as he opened the door, they just walked inside. Bypassed him and walked inside into the temple. So he was amazed. Then he said, the Lord has done his own job. He has brought his own elephants. So he knew that Krishna is a super soul in everybody's heart, including the elephants. And he desired to have an elephant ride. I couldn't do it. And he asked the elephants to come. And the festival was going on and these elephants, spare elephants, they just walked off and they came. And he came to know that actually they were not just the spare elephants, which I thought so. They were actually some of the main elephants. Because there were a whole lot of people coming from that Shiva temple and said, where are the elephants? And they came and saw that the elephants were in this temple. They were getting dressed by this pujari. And he was ready to take the Lord on the elephant. And they told the elephants, what are you doing? There's a big festival going on. How did you get the elephants here? He said, I don't know. They just came here. They just happened to come here. And I'm just taking the Lord on the elephant because he wants a ride. Then this pujaris and all the people, they said, that can't be done. We need to take the elephants back. And the elephants refused to go back. We won't go back. They drove the pujaris away with their trunk and with their tusks. So the pujaris, they didn't know what to do. So they said, give your lord an elephant ride. So they gave the lord a ride. And then afterwards the elephant said, we won't go back, we stay here. And not only that, after the next day of the festival, all the other elephants from there also came running this side. They just came away and they never went back. In this way it's mentioned that the temple got this property of elephants simply because the Lord decided, all of you come over here. And in this way, from then onwards, giving a donation of an elephant to the temple became a big thing. And many big people who have the capacity to do so, they donate elephants to the Lord. He accepts the donation. And there's a huge place filled with elephants. And the temple maintains them. Each elephant has got a mahout. And he is paid for, his life is insured, and he is given quarters, he is given, you know, everything that he needs. An elaborate arrangement. In this way, the Lord has got a lot of elephants. Every day there is an elephant ride, in the morning, in the afternoon, and the evening. In the night there are three elephants, very beautiful. And the Lord goes on the central elephant, which is highest, and the other two elephants are a little less tall. And you will see umbrellas, you will see chamaras, you will see peacock fans. A little bit of that we do in Mayapur. Similar to that, that's the same program that's offered in Mayapur to Shishi Radha Madhava. In this way, the Lord is worshipped there very nicely. And it is Shankaracharya who set up the whole procedure for worship. It's mentioned Shankaracharya and Narada Muni were together traveling by their mystic potency above. And Narada Muni paid obeisances to the Lord, immediately recognizing, and Shankaracharya didn't do so, for whatever reason, I don't know. He didn't do so, and immediately he lost his shakti to be traveling, and he fell down from the roof of the temple. He fell down into the temple flat. And as soon as he fell, he knew that I have done something wrong. And he composed prayers glorifying Govinda, called Govinda Ashtakam prayers, very famous. As soon as he sang those prayers, the Lord became very happy and he said, don't think that I just punished you for anything. I brought you here because you have a very special assignment. And I want you to institute deity worship in a particular way. And so Shankaracharya instituted the worship in that area. Very strict and very detailed. They have mudras for everything. And they have the pujari there doesn't go out of the temple for 6 months. He's got small quarters there. He stays there, takes bath there. He hardly sleeps for 3 hours a day. And he's on duty all the time for 6 months. Very detailed worship, very nice and very strict. So there were people coming from all over to visit the Lord. Became very famous. And there were two devotees who were mentioned to be associates of the deity. Specifically associates of the deity. And they were both wonderful devotees. One was a Nambudri Brahmin, scholar. His name was Narayana Bhattatri, very famous person. He has a wonderful history. His guru, another very great learned personality, was afflicted with rheumatism. And he couldn't move. And he taught his disciple, and this disciple was very dedicated. And at the end of his teaching, he asked, this disciple asked his guru what dakshina he would give you. And guru told him, my dear disciple, you have been so dedicated, loyal, and very interested. I just want one thing, if you can do as a favor to me, I'll accept it as your dakshina. Please relieve me from this disease by accepting this disease, if you can, so that I may enjoy a little bit of comfort. So what can a disciple say? Narayana Bhadadri immediately said, yes, so be it, as you so desire. And he took over that whole disease. And his guru became relieved. So then immediately he asked his guru, now, can you tell me some way, my dear Guru Maharaj, how I can be relieved of this disease? So his Gurudev said, that's a nice question that you have asked me. Only person who can relieve you of this disease is the Supreme Lord Himself. If you describe the pastimes of the Lord, He will be very pleased with you and He will relieve you of this disease. So this Narayana Bhadadri, who was a great devotee and a scholar and a Brahmin, Nambudri, he bid farewell to his guru and went inside the temple and sat down in front of the temple. And he was such a wonderful poet, scholar. He started reciting and composing wonderful poems about the pastimes of the Lord. His guru told him, you recite the pastimes of the Lord starting from the fish incarnation. So he went there and sat down in front of the deities. Very beautiful place if you enter the temple, small temple. And on the left side of the temple as you enter, you would see a big brass plaque which says that this is the place that Narayana Bhadadri sat down and composed these wonderful prayers. Very famous. It's a book called Narayaniyam. It's actually a condensation of the whole Bhagavat. All the pastimes of the Lord in the Bhagavatam he recited. A new composition, very beautifully done. So every time he would write a composition, he would look at the Lord and say, isn't this true? Is this not right? And the Lord, out of his great feeling for his devotee, would come out of the deity form and give darshan to him and said, shake his head and say, yes. And mostly he had a form of a small boy with a flute in his hand, with kaupin and all his, beautiful jewels on his hip, on his neck and his ears and little kiridam on his head. He looked very beautiful and he would say, yes, that's what I did. And once it was confirmed, he would write that in great happiness. And he was totally involved in describing the pastimes every day. And every day he would try to confirm it from the Lord, and the Lord would say, yes, that's what I did. And he would also relish it. Krishna will relish it. And this devotee, Bhattatri, was in great ecstasy composing it and getting a verification of that from the Lord. It was amazing. Sometimes he would get confused. Oh, I don't remember what this is. So once he asked the Lord, I want to know whether you broke the butter pot with a stick or with a stone. Some people say it's with a stick. Some people say it's with a stone. So I just want to ask you. And the Lord said, I did both. Sometimes I did with a stick, sometimes I did with a stone. He said that to him and he happily wrote that. Then another time he wrote Lord Ramachandra's pastime and said, you, out of your great mercy, you left Sita in the forest, abandoned her and came back. Immediately the Lord jumped out and said, it's not me. I didn't do that. It's Lord Ramachandra who did that, not me. Don't write that about me. And he was very surprised. And he would make that correction. Like that he would get everything reconfirmed. And to the extent that Lord corrected him and said, not me. I didn't do that. It's Ramachandra who did that. I would never do that to my devotees. So in this way, he had such a close a relationship with Krishna, and he gradually got freed from his disease and he became fit and find as soon as he had finished his composition. So everybody came to know about him. Narayana Bhattadri, his work is personally vouched for. His work is personally checked and corrected by Krishna. Such a great devotee. Krishna has personally come in front of him and done everything. So he became very famous. And if you become famous, and even if you're a devotee and you become famous, and if you're not careful, then there's a good chance that you can get affected. And that's what happened to Narayana Bhattadri. And that's very beautiful, wonderful. That Narayana Bhattadri was getting a lot of fame, recognition. He was moving around and talking and giving lectures from his book, Narayaniyam. There was another devotee along with this, parallel. Not in a Brahmana, not a very rich quality person, very poor. His name was Pundanam. Old man. He would walk a long distance. He would walk about some 5-6 hours and reach the temple. And it was a great event for him to come and take darshan of Krishna there. He came and he would take darshan and he would offer his prayers. He's a wonderful devotee. And he was so good, he would come and speak in the local language. Very simply he would speak the glories of the Lord. Very simply he would speak the Bhagavat. And all the local people would come and sit down. They were not great scholars. They were not greatly educated. They were not high class brahmanas. But when Pundanam would speak, they would love it. Because he would speak in their language, simple, full of love, full of devotion. And he would attract a lot of people. They would come and he would speak. So Pundanam was famous with all the locals. Narayana Bhattadri was very famous because of his scholarship and his learning. Both were wonderful devotees. Pundanam composed a beautiful, small book of prayers summarizing the whole Bhagavad philosophy very nicely in local language. And he thought that I want to offer this to the Lord. Then he came to know that Narayana Bhattadri is so dear and he is composes Narayaniyam and he's been personally checked by the Lord. So he wanted to get it approved by him before he offered to the Lord. So he went to Narayana Bhattadri in the middle of the darshan. When darshan was going on and Narayana Bhattadri was offering his prayers, as soon as he finished and he turned around, he said, "May I have your attention?" And people were watching. It's a meeting of Pundanam and Narayana Bhattadri. And he asked, "Will you kindly read this and approve this? I have written glorification of Krishna and his pastimes. I'll be so happy if you would approve it. I will consider this to be the Lord's approval." So Narayana Bhattadri looked at him and he looked at the book in his hands and he could make out that it didn't look like it's made in Sanskrit. So he quickly asked him, "Was it composed in Sanskrit or what?" He said, "No, it's in ordinary local language." He just walked off. Narayana Bhattadri simply walked off, murmuring, "I don't want to see it. I can't approve it." And Pundanam was finished, devastated. He felt that my work is not approved by Narayana Bhattadri. It's no use. What a devotee am I? I'm nobody in front of him. And if he doesn't approve my work, what's the use? I cannot offer it to the Lord. And he felt so depressed and he just walked off back to his house. Of course, he would come back every day. The next day, Pundanam was coming and offering his prayers to the Lord. And he would chant in his own way the Vishnu Sahasranama. He was chanting that in his own way. He is not a great Sanskrit scholar or anything, but he knows. Like many ISKCON devotees are, they may not know great Sanskrit, they may be from elsewhere and they may not have perfect pronunciation, but they are offering it with love and devotion and they chant. He was also giving an offering. And Narayana Bhattatri happened to be standing the other side. And as usual, he was chanting the Vishnu Sahasranama, Pundanam. And there came a particular shloka there, which says, Padmanabha Amara Prabhu. Amara means demigods, devas. So, it says that Padmanabha Amara Prabhu. But Pundanam was pronouncing it as Padmanabha Mara Prabhu. He didn't look into the Amara. He pronounced it Padmanabha Mara Prabhu. And when he heard that, you know, Narayana Bhattadri being a scholar and a great, you know, person in his education and learning, he gave an angry look at Pundanam and said, stop it. Right in front of the deity, he said, stop it. Don't read it. Don't chant this. And Pundanam became again very depressed. Oh my gosh, I made a mistake. So you know what you're chanting? Nara Padmanabha Amara Prabhu. Padmanabha, O Lord of the demigods. Lord of those who have no death. Amara. And instead you're saying Padmanabha Mara Prabhu. Mara means tree. Do you mean to say that Padmanabha is the Lord of the tree? You changed everything. Stop it. Then from inside, instantly a huge voice came out. Then who else is the Lord of the trees? May I ask you? I am also the Lord of the trees. What he's saying is correct. And the Lord came out and gave darshan as Lord of the trees. He became a huge tree with creepers and branches and roots. And he spoke to him, I am the Lord of the trees. And Narayana Bhattatri was floored. Pundanam was watching with his mouth open. For a moment, and then the Lord disappeared. It was hushed silence. Narayana Bhattatri just turned and walked away. And another occasion, again, when Pundanam was chanting, he again corrected him. The Lord appeared again and said, I am not so interested in your vibhakti as much I am as interested in bhakti of Pundanam. Don't correct him. Vibhakti means Sanskrit grammar and, you know, alterations, etc., etc. So the Lord poetically said, I am not so much interested in your vibhakti as much I am interested in the bhakti of Pundanam. So again, Narayana Bhattatri was corrected by the Lord. But still his pride did not take a lower level. He again walked away feeling a little, differently. And he was giving every evening a session in that season, speaking from his book. So, on that particular event, he would read the book and give a wonderful explanation. And there's so many people sitting, a lot of them Brahmins, a lot of them educated people from all over, come to listen to Narayana Bhattatri speaking. And he would speak, and after that he would shut his book. And then he would ask if anybody has a question. And normally there'll be nobody asking any question. Because he's a great scholar, what's question will anybody ask? And his work has been approved by the Lord. But today, there was a small boy sitting there with his dhoti tucked up, you know, right up to his knees, bare-bodied, with a Brahmin thread around him. As though he was from a Brahmin Nambudri family. He got up and said, I have a question. And then everybody laughed. The small boy has a question. And they said, sit down, don't. Then Narayanapati said, no, let him ask a question. Let him ask a question. Very liberally. Then this boy, he chanted two of those shlokas full by heart. And he said, in this composition of yours, which is so wonderful, thank you. I think there is a grammatical error. And he pointed out the grammatical error. And he said, this shouldn't be like this, this should be like this. And this shouldn't be like this, should be like this. And the meaning of this will shift like this if you say this. And he sat down. Narayana Bhattadri went back into his book and looked at the composition and said, my gosh, it is wrong. It is wrong. But then nobody heard it, what this boy said. So he made fun of it and said, okay, anyway. And then he shifted, took the book, and he was wondering, how is it wrong? My composition is wrong? He went back home and looked at it and said, it is wrong. But then it has been checked by the Lord. How is it is wrong? He came back the next day during the program. Again he opened the book and he gave a wonderful session. Everybody was amazed. Wow, so wonderful. and he was looking out for anybody who was there. There was nobody. At least the boy wasn't there. And so he closed and said, if there's any question. But as soon as he closed and looked up, there was a boy again there. Right in front of him. He was standing and said, I have a question. And everyone said again, oh, this boy again, he's just playing the fool. And Narayana Bhattadri became a little perturbed. This boy's come again. And again the boy repeated verses that he chanted today by heart. And he said, can I tell you that this is wrong here, this is wrong here, this again he pointed out false. And instantly Narayana Bhattadri couldn't take it. And everybody was hearing it today. Then he took the book and he said, that's not possible. That's not possible. He took the book, put it under his arms and he ran into the temple. He ran into the temple in front of the Lord and said, it's you who is doing it. Why are you insulting me in front of everyone? Why do you do that to me? And he started crying in front of the Lord. Then the Lord told him, my dear Narayana Bhattadri, my dear wonderful devotee, you are so dear to me. But why did you not approve the work of Pundanam, my dear devotee? He is also my devotee. Then Narayana Bhattadri said, but how there are mistakes in my work? I got it approved by you. Isn't it? Then the Lord told him, my dear devotee, I accepted your devotion. And you offered this with great devotion to me. I didn't see anything wrong with it. And nobody will see anything wrong with it. But since you become proud, and since this has got into your head a little bit, I want to show you that your devotion is what I accepted. Not your great composition. It was offered with great love to me, and therefore I accepted your bhakti. But I want to show you that it has got plenty of faults, but most people won't see it. I want to show you that you can also make faults. You're also wrong. Your composition is imperfect. But I've accepted your devotion. That is why this has been accepted by me. So Narayana Bhattadri came to his senses. Immediately he felt, yes, that's true. After I've become famous, I am not enjoying the same rasa, the same taste of devotion with you. And he fell down and paid his obeisances to the Lord. Then instantly he turned around and went looking for Pundanam. And he ran behind Pundanam. when he ran behind Poondanam, Poondanam said, my gosh, now what? Did I do another mistake? And he started running too. I must have done something wrong. I don't want to face him again. And he started running too. And Narayana Bhadadri ran behind him, caught up with him, fell down at his feet, held his feet and said, you are the real devotee. You are the real devotee. Krishna has favored you. I tell you, he likes that work of yours. And then he took it up and he read it in great ecstasy and recited Poondanam's work. And he said, the Lord really loves this. It's full of devotion. In this way, Narayana Bhadadri approved of the work of Poondanam. So Krishna, he gives protection to his devotees. He gives his blessing to his devotees. But in the material world, there is a good chance that we can get carried away by our position as devotees. We can get carried away by the good fortune that we have in becoming Krishna's devotees, in getting his association, in getting opportunities to do devotional service, in getting an opportunity to represent him. We may not be qualified at all. Just like we have become qualified because of the mercy of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, his divine grace. There's an instance in the Lilamrita of a devotee asking Prabhupada, how is it that I was in such a bad situation, so low material situation? How is it, Prabhupada, that I become situated in such a nice position? And Prabhupada replied that, I brought you good fortune. It's me. I brought you good fortune. So another time he explained to another devotee when he asked that, how can I always be humble? As famous, he said that, always remember that ditch from where I picked you up. Don't you become proud. There's another instance where Prabhupada, with tears in his eyes, and said, please don't become puffed up and spoil everything. So these are instructions from our founder Acharya, that although we are situated in a good position, in good fortune, it's not written in our horoscope. It's not because of our own effort. It's because of the good fortune bestowed on us by His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, it behooves of us to not ride on that, but to be more humble, knowing fully well that I don't qualify for this. I may become a representative in the line of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and I can preach the philosophy from his books. I can chant a few shlokas. I can, you know, convince people. But that's not my doing. I am able to do that because Prabhupada is working as an instrument through me. You see? This was the mood of Prabhupada. This is how Prabhupada, when he came to America, he wrote, my dear Lord, I have neither bhakti nor do I have knowledge, but I've got the title Bhakti Vedanta. So if you want, you may prove that. Because all I can do is to act as your instrument. You can make me dance as a puppet in your hands. You can make me dance. I just offer myself completely. I am a nobody. When after that big show that Prabhupada had with Allen Ginsberg and all the rock groups performing, the next day, Prabhupada was approached by a reporter or somebody who came rushing inside and asked Prabhupada, climbing up the wooden staircase, Prabhupada was approached and said, are you not Allen Ginsberg's guru? Are you not Allen Ginsberg's guru? And Prabhupada turned to him very slowly and said, I am nobody's guru. And very humbly hung his head lower and said, I am everybody's servant. And then he went further to say, it's not easy to be a servant. And this is Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada speaking to somebody insignificant somewhere, and the reporter doesn't even know what is Guru and what's Prabhupada saying. It didn't matter, Prabhupada could very well have told, yeah, I am that guy, you know, let me just dress up a little bit and come, you can interview me, and here I am, and he can pose and he can do so many things. And Prabhupada was so introspectively saying to him, I am not anybody's guru, I am everybody's servant. In other words, I came all the way to America to serve everybody. In other words, guru means everybody's servant. That was the humility with which Prabhupada started this movement. Although he was the author of so many wonderful commentaries and amazing purports, Prabhupada is maintaining his position and saying, I am everybody's servant. And then going further to qualify and say, it's not easy to be a servant. It's an amazing thing. So the more we are humble, the greater services we can do for Krishna. The more we are puffed up, smaller things we would do, and that small thing is enough to puff us up a lot. So there's great danger even for devotees. There are so many instances of Krishna curbing the pride of his own devotees. So it's important. One thing is humility, the other thing is pride. At the same time, one should not feel unnecessarily low and not have even self-esteem. Sometimes devotees, they don't know how to handle this. They become too humble. Or they feel that I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that, and they don't know how to conduct themselves. To such an extent that they become psychologically affected. I'm supposed to be humble, I'm not supposed to do this. Somebody is harming you, you can't do this, you can't do that. And they don't know how to handle this and balance this. The same day Prabhupada told us, be proud of being a devotee. This is Prabhupada's words, be proud of being a devotee. In other words, when we watch people in this world enjoying life and making it big and living it out nicely, we shouldn't be thinking, I should have done that actually. If I had not been a devotee, I would have become one of those guys. And here I'm a devotee. We can't rise up. We can sometimes fail to accommodate this properly. So it's a fact that one should be proud of being a devotee when they see materialists. When you see materialists, don't feel that you've lost anything. You should rather be thinking, I don't want to be like that. I'm happy being a devotee. It doesn't matter I have much of a, don't have much of a bank balance, doesn't have much, it doesn't matter if I don't have much of a, you know, material resource. But the fact that I got a chance to render devotional service, that's the greatest wealth. And a devotee becomes proud of his position as a devotee when he compares himself to other materialists. But when he comes back home, he should not carry that same attitude again with the devotees. With the devotees, he should be humble. What seva can I do for you? Tvat brithya brithya paricharaka brithya brithya brithasya brithya itimam shmaralokanat. Kulashekara Alwar. He is praying, I would be happy and successful in my life, my dear Lord, if you can recognize me as a servant of the servant of the servant of your servants. Prabhupada also told us that you should be a lion in the chase and a lamb at home. In the outside world, when we meet people, we should be boldly presenting ourselves as devotees. I felt this all along. We're coming through the airports and everywhere. I was conspicuous by my very special costume and by the tilak, and I could see people, everybody was looking at me at the same time not looking at me. As soon as they look at me, they just turn their face, and as I'm not looking at them, they'll look back. I could make out that everyone was looking at me. And I was also wondering, I must be pretty strange looking in the airport. I was for some time wondering, walking around with these orange bed sheets, and they were wondering, who's this guy? What is this strange thing on his forehead? And almost everybody there, I mean, the crowd of people, nobody was not giving me a second look. So I was a cynosure, a central piece everywhere. Chanting Hare Krishna in my bhava, wondering, some people are looking at me amusingly. And the air hostess was giving me a special, how are you? I could make out that I was a special person. And I was wondering for a moment, initially I felt self-conscious. Then afterwards I said, no, very good. Let them see me with tilak and kantimala. And after that I became very happy that I'm able to flaunt my costume and my Vaishnav dress and have everybody see me. I am a representative of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Will care ask me a question? I'm eager to answer. But there was nobody asking me a question. They were keeping away from me. So that's Prabhupada's advice to us, that we should be careful that we would not become proud. And more often than not, Maya takes care of it. If we are genuinely interested and serious devotees, then we can feel how we are under the influence of material nature and how we need to always remain humbly oriented, praying to Krishna to offer His protection always. So, I've been asked to speak on some Leela and not speak too much of philosophy. So I did that. They said I should speak about something from your area where you're preaching, temple, katha, and deities and story. So hope I've done some justice to it. Om Tatsat. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any question? Or any comment? Yes.
Is there an elephant named Airavata?
Pardon?
Was there, there's a, I can't remember, it seems, is there an elephant in the Bhagavatam, Airavata?
Airavata is Indra's elephant's name.
Okay. And can you say something about Gajendra, the elephant Gajendra?
Yeah, Gajendra. Yeah, he's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Gajendra is a great devotee of the Lord. You want me to mention something about it? Yeah, he's an elephant devotee. Gajendra became Gajendra because in his previous life he was Indradyumna Maharaj. And he got cursed because Indradyumna, if I remember right, it's from the Puranas, that he was a very powerful king, great Vaishnava. And he would do elaborate puja every day of the Lord. And once when he was doing so, I think Durvasa Muni or some other rishi, don't remember right, he came there and he kept him waiting, went ahead with his puja. And Durvasa Muni, whoever the sage was, he waited and he got angry at him. And he said, for your not responding to me and not giving me the respect due to me, he cursed you to be an elephant. That's how he became an elephant. But he had the opportunity to recollect prayers when he was in that great danger. He was a Gajendra, he was like a king of elephants. Very special. He remained a king even in the elephant kingdom that he was in. It was in some other loka described in the Bhagavatam. And he came drunk with his female companions and his kids and everybody, whole row of them. And he came to drink water. And as he was drinking water, a crocodile caught hold of his leg. And he thought it was easy to shake off the crocodile, but he couldn't. Although he was a powerful elephant, known as the king of the elephants there, he couldn't shake off that crocodile. And nobody could help him. All others who came to help him couldn't succeed. And finally, Gajendra understood that this is by the will of Providence that this is happening. And with great feeling, he remembered prayers from his previous life. And he chanted those beautiful prayers to the Lord. And the Lord appeared on his Garuda in his four-handed form. And when he appeared to Gajendra's vision, Gajendra became very weak because he was fighting for thousands of years, it's mentioned. He plucked a lotus from the bank and he offered it to the Lord in prayer. The Lord was very pleased with Gajendra and he cut off the head of the crocodile with his Sudarshan. And the crocodile happened to be another great personality called Huhu, his name was, and he teased the rishis and sages by pulling their legs underwater. And they said, they cursed him and said, you'll be a crocodile underwater for what you did. That's how he became a crocodile. And they told him that you'll be relieved directly by Vishnu when he appealed to them. I'm sorry I did this. So this is how they came together. And that Gajendra pastime is nicely explained in the Bhagavad beautifully. There's another elephant there in Guruvayur. Amongst these 50 elephants, there's one elephant called Keshavan, who was very special. It's mentioned that he would always win the race and always get the Lord on his head to carry them for 10 days. On those 10 days, the elephant is treated with great respect. There's a special tent made for him, and all the Mahaprasadam from the Lord goes to him. They get balls of it, they keep eating it. So he would win the race most of the time because he would fight and win so that he could carry the Lord. He would fast on Ekadashi. He knows when is Ekadashi and he wouldn't eat on Ekadashi. And all the other elephants were sometimes used for lumbering and for some other work to generate some revenue. He would not go. He would say, cannot go. I won't do anything else. You can ask me to do anything, seva for the Lord, but anything else I'll not do. And he was very special. He would carry the Lord and he would fast on Ekadashi. And he would go pradakshina around the temple. And he passed away on an Ekadashi while he was fasting. He came in front of the Lord and he offered his obeisances and dug his tusk into the ground and remained like that and gave up his body in paying obeisances to the Lord. There's a movie made about him. There's a movie made, Keshavan. It's a big famous, and if you enter the temple, you will see the tusk of Keshavan on the top, offered to the Lord in the entrance on the top.
Where is that temple?
The temple is in Kerala.
Oh.
Very famous. Very beautiful, small temple, gold, this thing on top. You have this thatched roof, copper-plated roof.
Thank you for
a very nice class. Hare Krishna. Prabhu, thank you.
Hare Krishna. If you analyze Prabhupada's classes, the structure of his classes, one striking thing is that he never told many stories. He never told a lot of lila. He would usually give one personal reference. There would be one or two bits of humor, and then it would just be shlokas. Basically, he'd be explaining shlokas straight from the Bhagavatam. And his consideration seemed to be that the time that the preacher has with his audience is so valuable that only Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan should be given. But nowadays, we don't seem to... You know, he's the founder Acharya of our movement. And nowadays, that doesn't happen so much. And there's a much stronger balance of lila over philosophy. And I think about this sometimes. I was just wondering if you have any comment on this.
Well, true. What you said is very true. Prabhupada's lectures, all of them are, I would say, very wonderfully structured. I would read the shloka, then I will explain it philosophically, then he will appropriately mention some leela, a little bit story or something, and then conclude on it very nicely. True, he would do that. And as far as my doing this today, if that's what your point is, I was asked that people will be interested in hearing some, they don't visit South India, they don't know all these temples, so maybe Maharaj, you can speak something about some leela from some of these temples. So this is where I preach. So I thought I will read something, because I was not given a specific shloka to speak on. If it was so, then I would speak on the shloka. But I thought that I should read something from Prabhupada's book first. I read that and I added also the temple leela to it. I tried my best to remain within the mandate of relating some South Indian temple leela plus doing justice to reading Prabhupada's book Shastra. A general comment on people are talking too much about leela and etc. etc. Well, times have changed also. You speak philosophy, they can go to sleep. If you speak leela, they may stay awake. So you speak a little philosophy, and then when they're about to sleep, you speak a leela. And then when they're too much awake, you speak a little philosophy. You got to tune it a little bit. So a good balance of that will be nice too. You know, sometimes we like to hear pastimes, do kirtan, bhajan, and that type of thing also should be allowed. I'm not able to completely answer your question, but... Yeah?
I have a comment also, if you don't mind, about Prabhupada's statement that I'm everybody's servant, and it's not easy to be a servant.
Yeah.
Thinking that, you know, Prabhupada, he didn't think that he was everybody's master. He actually felt that he is everybody's servant. And being a servant is fairly easy if a servant is sane. I mean, if the master is sane, if he's in his right mind. But if the master has lost his intelligence, like the whole world has, then you can understand that being the servant of such a master who's insane, that's not easy.
True. You're right. If somebody is mad, sure, you can't be a servant. The wonderful thing about Prabhupada saying that he is a servant, like you mentioned, very nice point. He was genuinely feeling it. He was a servant. See? He said that about many of his disciples in America. He said that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has sent all of you to help me. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also mentioned that Dasosmi, when anybody paid obeisances to him, when his disciples paid obeisances to him, that I am serving you in this role. I am being a spiritual master to you so that you can rehearse your surrender to Krishna. And that's my service to you. And that's not getting to my head. I am continuing to remain in the mood of a servant. It's a really challenging thing to do. So Prabhupada was being a servant, and he meant it. Otherwise, why would he take so much of a pain in that advanced age to show all his followers how to render service to Krishna, both in action, in word, in deed, everything. So he was a genuine spiritual master. In the sense, he was also a genuine, compassionate servant of everybody. It's very deep. Thank you for bringing that point. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I'm almost forgetting what I was thinking. Trying to fix the microphone. It's in connection with the body, the Prabhu's commentary, that I was just hearing like Bhagavad Gita classes, and Srila Prabhupada was telling different stories, you know, about, you know, pastimes. Not too many, as the devotee was saying. But also he, like in Kapila's pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Kapila is telling his mom that his devotees enjoy discussing his pastime. I don't remember the Sanskrit. Sabajayante mama paurusani, something like that. That they enjoy. So Srila Prabhupada many times he says that the devotees, like commenting in those verses, they actually enjoy discussing the pastime of the Lord. So he might not be lecturing to pastime because he's just explaining the Siddhanta philosophy. You know, not exactly the Lila. But also, in his purpose, he's telling us, you know, we have to discuss this pastime because this is the activity of the devotees. So, today they are talking about so many Lilas, you know. That's also instructed by Srila Prabhupada. So, he didn't have the time to go to all the details because he has so many plans, but he is explaining the Siddhanta and, you know, in a nutshell, explaining all the pastimes, you know, everything, like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know. When he's giving lectures in Srimad Bhagavatam, all these details, you know, he's saying all that stuff. So Maharaj, then I have a question. You were saying that, you know, quoting Srila Prabhupada, that he was actually feeling like a servant of everybody. So that I can understand, you know. And then, but I want you to explain a little bit about the something he said also. There is service, like seva, and there is also, I don't know, like doya. You know, when you're serving like a superior and you're serving an inferior. So even though it looks like both things serving, he said that, I don't have exactly the idea, that's why I want you to say, you know, explain. He said that when you serve the superior, you know, like advanced devotee, that's seva. And when you're serving like inferior person, it's like doya or something like that. Can you explain something about that?
Who said that?
Yeah, like there are two things.
No,
I don't know.
Somebody say it or you're making a statement?
No, I heard many times that there are two things. Like when you're helping somebody else, looks like service to that person, but actually has another name. I don't know, that's why I'm asking. The name is like doya or something like mercy.
Mercy. Doya means mercy.
Like mercy.
Yeah.
So I heard the idea many times, but I really never pay attention. You know, I was just like a space out. So I heard the idea like,